sent messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, Mother.
Welcome back to Timbo.
Yes.
Timbo 11.
Yes.
Now, Brian Blessed, we were talking about in our last episode.
Right.
I'm still down a Brian Blessed
his hole
thing. Right. Yeah. Which I was down up Brian Blessed's hole. I that led me to learn that he was in one of my favorite shows as a kid, the Basil Brush Show.
Everybody, and welcome to another Basil Brush Show.
Hello, and to the shoe, welcome. I see.
Yes.
What do you call a man who puts chocolate blancmange in his ears?
I don't know. What do you call a man who puts chocolate blancmange in his ears?
You can call him anything you like. He can't hear a blooming word you're saying. What's the matter?
There you go. That's for the people that grew up in...
Right. 60s,
70s. The 60s and 70s, yeah. Basil Brush in England, in Australia. Probably he's a fox, puppet fox. And the guy, here's a bit of trivia, the guy who was playing the host with him, his co-host, the human, Derek Fowles, best known for playing Bernard Woolley in Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love those shows.
It started on Basil Brush. Yeah. There you go, a little bit of... completely useless rabbit hole trivia. Welcome back,
which we specialize.
Timbo. Last time we finished with Brian Blessed, and then, but before that, we were talking about how that was Catherine's fault. Don't blame me. We were talking about how Timbo sent Germanicus to the east to deal with all of the problems that were going on there. Also sent piece of shit, Calpurnius, piece of shit, down there to keep an eye on him.
Right.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe we don't know. We think he went. Psst, kid,
yeah.
Go look, this kid is way too popular.
Yeah.
Thinks he's hot shit. You're the piece of shit. Go down there and keep an
negate
eye on him.
That
don't
shit.
Let him
right.
Don't let him get away with too much being nice business. Because I'm not sending him down there to be nice and popular. I'm sending him down there to
fix shit.
Ideally die in battle. But
Sorry, you reminded me of something. Let's analyze Tiberius here. Ooh. For a moment. He is saying, I'm concerned because Germanicus was able to endear himself to the troops along the Rhine, and now my fear is that he is going to endear himself to the troops in Syria. Well, we all know that Germanicus is the chosen heir by Augustus himself. Shouldn't that be a part of his job description? Because you're not a leader unless you actually have troops in this world. And so doesn't that say more about Tiberius's paranoia? I mean, he knows he's a seat warmer for this guy. I think it speaks more to Tiberius's mindset than anything else. It's not like Germs is going to raise troops in Syria and then come back and take Rome. He's already going to get Rome. He's just got to wait a little while. I just think it speaks volumes of Tiberius's mindset.
Yeah, but does he need to wait? I mean, Tiberius is a complicated character. Like, we know what we think. Anyway, going back when it was him and his bro, Drew, they were hanging out, we think they were like, it's time to bring back the Republic.
Right.
Augie. And then Thibaut didn't want anything more to do with it. He walked away from the whole thing. Then he comes back and he gets bored catching fish on roads. He's sort of the reluctant
Yeah.
Princeps, the reluctant princeps. in some ways, maybe he does. He's still like, I don't want to do this. I don't want anyone else to do this. Maybe he wants to get out of it. Maybe he does want to hand over power as quickly as he can. Or maybe he's fallen in love with the power and gotten used to it and doesn't want to give it up. I don't know, man. He's a complicated guy, Tiberius.
And we need to remember that. Yeah.
He's full of contradictions, Tiberius. This assumption that he's on the throne and he sees Germanicus as a threat is hard. As we'll see, you know, moving forwards, Tiberius pretty much walks away from the whole thing anyway.
Right.
I'm not convinced that Tiberius was, that ambitious when it came to the power.
Right. But let's go ahead and make this a little more complicated. When Germanicus hears about a piece of shit being appointed to be the governor in Syria, he's got a guess that Thibaut does not trust him. Now, like we've said before, Roman tradition says, yes, you send an older officer, an experienced man, with the young leader to be guardrail so he can go and learn and not make major mistakes and get the empire in a bunch of trouble. But as we've said, Germanicus has learned a lot in the last 3 years, fighting the Germans, warfare, diplomacy, deception, all that kind of stuff. So still appointing this guy to be his overseer, it's a bit of an insult. But again, we have to keep in mind that Thibaut, as far as we know, because we can't get inside his head, he seems to be riding a fence. He seems to be in the middle, balancing his honor of Augustus's legacy and Augustus's desires, certainly when it comes to Germanicus, and at the same time, checking Germanicus before he goes too far, too fast, and gets the empire in trouble. So it's a very convoluted situation, but all we have to go by at the end of the day is everybody's decisions. And Tiberius's decision is to take this arrogant prick who thinks his heritage is more impressive than Germanicus's imperium, and he's sending him along with him. So we, at the end of the day, you have to go by the decisions made and the actions that people undertake.
Well, maybe he's sending him down there just to help out. Listen, Germanicus is, you know, got a few wins under his belt, but quite frankly, not everything in Germany went smoothly.
Sure.
He had the troops were revolting, probably not his fault. Augustus did die, but still, he didn't really handle it.
Could have been better.
That well.
Right.
You know, he had problems with the boats and dealing with Arminius and you know, maybe he's like, this guy, he's all right.
Right.
But we need an older, wiser man to keep an eye on things and report back to me what's going on.
Yeah.
But from Germanicus' perspective, none of this matters because he's got the big imp.
Right. Well, let me just count it before you go on. Let me just count on this. So out of all the people that Tiberius chooses to look after this guy, he picks the biggest, most arrogant cocksucker there is, who has a well-known history, as does his family, of absolutely hating anything that's other than the Republic, the Triumvirate, the Second Triumvirate, and Augustus and Tiberius as well. So I think he's sending a message, or at least it appears he's sending a message that Germs is going to pick up by picking this person, Piso.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We don't know.
Maybe.
We don't know.
We don't. I mean, did he deliberately send this guy because he was a piece of shit, or was he just, listen.
But you can't separate the from the guy.
Who can I send to Syria? Like, honestly, Syria, not a great gig, going to Syria.
Right.
Terrible, terrible gig. Everyone who was sent, even Pontius Pilate, he's like, fucking hate
God,
this place.
Nothing
it's
to
just
do.
Desert and Jews.
In
everywhere
fighting.
I look around, desert and Jews.
Sandy Jews. Oh my God, they're always fighting each other.
And the Jews have got this weird superstition, this weird cult that we kind of grit our teeth and accept because Julius Caesar's told us we had to.
Yeah. But it's annoying.
More on that later.
Yeah.
But they're crazy. Yeah. They believe they're special, that their imaginary God loves them, but we rule the place, so he can't love them that much. But
not very good.
Do they wake up and smell the Jupiter roses? No, they just keep going along and going, oh, we're so special.
It's complicated.
By the way, I posted something on Facebook last night. Gary Arndt.
Arndt.
World's greatest travel photographer. Right. Tried to debate me on it. He failed because I'm me. No. Did something that I only learnt recently. One of the names that the Romans called Jupiter, the chief god of the Roman pantheon was Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
He was the sky god, the sky father, the god of thunder and lightning.
Very, very right.
Jupiter comes from the Greek Zeus Pater, Father Zeus. They got it from the Greek pantheon. Zeus, the word itself, comes from Deus, which is the Proto-Indo-European root of it, which again means the sun, basically, the sky father, the sun, the bringer of warmth and light. So Deus, Dei, gives us, is the sky god, becomes Zeus under the Greeks, becomes Jupiter under the Romans. And another name the Romans had for Jupiter was J-O-V-E, which in English we normally pronounce as Jove. By Jove!
Right.
Jove.
That's, right? That's what I say.
But
yeah,
apparently the Latin pronunciation of it would have been Yahweh.
Ah. Cool.
Because they didn't have J's, right? They had an I, and it was pronounced like a Y, right. And the V was pronounced like a W, so it was Yahweh, the same as the Hebrew god Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly different linguistic roots for the two. Also, some debate over how the Hebrews would have pronounced Yahweh, YHVH, because YHWH, because they didn't have vowels, and it's all just assumed. But anyway, that's usually how it's assumed they would have pronounced it. They weren't allowed to speak it out loud, supposedly, either. But if they were going to take his name in vain, they go, "Oh, Yahweh, look what the dog just did on the living room rug." Coincidentally,
right,
same name, same sounding name as the head of the Roman pantheon.
Mm.
Don't know how I got into that. Piso. So he sends Piso. But from Germanicus's perspective, as I said, it's all good because he's got the big imp.
Right.
He's got the big imp. So it should be okay. But, you know, Germanicus isn't as young at this stage. He's in his early 30s. He's not as young or inexperienced as Gaius Caesar was when Augustus sent him to the east. Of course, Gaius died.
Good point.
A lot of Romans have died when they've gone east. Probably one of the reasons why Tiberius sends him out there, I think. But maybe he's trying to protect him by giving him a mentor, somebody who's older and wiser to guide him and advise him.
Right.
Well,
right.
Does he? We are assuming that probably based on Tacitus.
Hates what he stands for.
Of them. Right. Yeah, well, I don't know. I didn't get to talk to Piso myself, but yes. That is the assumption in the histories, that he hates
it. I tried to talk to him, but he said, fuck off. For. So,
yeah, fuck
right.
You.
Yeah. Where were we?
I don't know.
Should we skip to the year? In the year 18... Germs got his second consulship, this time with Tiberius himself. Again, this is another sign that Germs is the heir. Germs is already on his way to the east because that's where the Senate is sending him. But again, and I find this so fascinating, he does stop by to visit Drusus and Dalmatia. They are still friends. As far as we know, everything is good between these two. And I think between these two, almost like Tiberius, I think both know their place. Look, Germanicus, you're the heir. I'm the son of the guy who's currently in charge. My job is to back you up. But I don't think there was any tension between them. I think they're good, but it doesn't hurt to stop in, check on Drusus on your way to the east just to be safe. A good politician would do that.
Yeah, they do seem to be close, very close in age, cousins / adopted brothers.
Right.
Doesn't seem to have, the conflict between Thibaut and Germs, if it is in fact correct, doesn't seem to have trickled down to Drew. But anyway, so he goes off then after he pops in to see Drew. Agrippina and Gaius, his son, and probably the rest of the brood, join him. They head down the coast of Illyricum, think Turkey, to Nicopolis. So this is the city, Nicopolis, where his adopted grandfather, Augustus, defeated his biological grandfather, Antony, and the battle was actually won by his wife's father, Agrippa.
Yeah.
So it's real Days of Our Lives shit here.
Yeah. Now, again, because this is this territory, this visit was probably done with the permission of Tiberius. And again, the 50th anniversary of Actium is coming up. But again, this visit around this time, that's just got to be another sign that Germs was the next princeps. And so he goes, he checks it out. I mean, why wouldn't you? This has got to be a fascinating place for history, is, and it's his family. So Germ inspects the spoils dedicated by Augustus, and you know he's got to check out the camp that his grandfather Antony was at. So he's got to be exploring, he's got to be fascinated by this. But at the same time, like you were hinting at, maybe, I don't know if he had mixed feelings, but it certainly had to be a complicated emotional time for him. Unless it's to him, it's just so far in the past, it doesn't matter anymore. I wish we knew what he really felt about that.
Mm. By the way, there's a lot of great ruins at Nicopolis. You can go there and visit. It's in Greece, in Epirus. Who nice. Came from Epirus, Ray? Mm-hmm.
Epirus. Was that Alexander's mother? No, I'm thinking of...
No, yep, Alexander's mother.
Nailed it.
Olympia came from Epirus.
Yeah.
He goes to inspect the spoils dedicated by Augustus there. I seem to recall that there were hulls from Antony's ships that he took and he stuck up there. I'm not sure how they survived over 50 years. There was the camp where Antony stayed while his ships were being repaired after a storm. He visits all of that. And then they head on to Athens. Now, when they get to Athens, people love Agrippa in Athens. He's very popular because he's good-looking, he's eloquent. People just love him wherever he goes. Right. He was George Clooney when he's walking around Athens. With an espresso in his hand. Women were throwing their panties at him. Men were saying, listen, you know, I've got permission from my wife that if I ever need to go gay, I'll go gay with you.
Yeah.
He's like, thanks very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You're my freebie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he only walked around with a single lictor to show how much he trusted the Athenians. Which went a long way with them. They're like, oh, you.
Come here, you.
He did have more lictors when he got to Athens, but then he said, I only need the one. Then he got mugged on a tram, like I did in Athens. So
fucking Athenians.
Should have kept his lictors. But
up until then.
Finger banged his pockets and stole all of his cash, like they did to me in Athens. I got robbed Athens.
Yeah.
Devastating experience that was. But anywho.
So again, that just impresses that he's the locals, that he's willing to walk around with just one bodyguard. They love him. He's doing the, you know, so he's doing great there. He hits a home run in Athens, if I may. And then he sails on to Lesbos, and it's there that his wonderful wife, who's the only surviving grandchild of Augustus, she has her last child, Julia Livilla. And the locals really take this as a sign that something as good is going to happen to them, or good luck. So they actually deify her for spreading her legs and dropping a child.
Well, you know, Augustus had been deified, Julius had been deified. Not often a woman gets deified, though.
Yeah, good for her. I'm not trying to take anything away from her. Good for her.
Yeah.
Julia
have a good life? Did she live a long life, Ray?
I
Julia LaVilla?
Don't think so, but what do you have?
Yeah, no, not a good ending. And, you know, she should have known that you don't call anyone Julia. It's kind of, why would you do that? It's the death wish when you name one of the girls in this family Julia.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she's not going to have a good run. But anyway, we'll get to that in probably 2 years. All up, Germs and Agrippina had 9 children.
Damn, hit that, would you? Oh my God.
He did. Nero Julius Caesar, Drusus Julius Caesar, Tiberius Julius Caesar, a child whose name we don't know died, but normally called Ignotus. I think that means we don't know the name. Gaius the Elder, Gaius the Younger, a.k.a. Caligula. Sure. Agrippina the Younger, Julia Drusilla, and of course Julia Livilla. Only 6 of those children came of age. Tiberius and Ignotus died as infants, and Gaius the Elder died in early childhood.
My God. Yeah.
30% rate with keeping your kids alive when you are the granddaughter of Augustus and your husband is destined to be the emperor, still only a 30% success rate keeping your kids alive. That's ancient Rome, man.
Yeah.
It's like when people...
Exactly.
When I come across people that are like natural birthers and they're like, you know what? Natural is best. Why am I doing that as Donald Trump? I don't know. Natural is best. And the natural ways are better. Okay, you realize that when people used to do it naturally, like a third of them died, and the mothers often died as well. But hey, you know, it's
you do, yeah.
It's Darwin Awards, man. Yeah.
If that makes you feel like a yuppie, or you're in touch with a Gaia, the spirit of the earth, hey, you go for it. But so Agrippina and her children stay in Lesbos. Germ's going to go. He's going to go working. He's going to go touring. He goes to the Propontis, the Sea of Marmara, and he's going to check things out, Byzantium. And on his way back, he wants to go to even other places, but the winds stop him. But still, while his wife is recovering, he certainly, you know, he gets around. He flies the flag of Rome. He gets out and he sees things. And so far, he's doing okay. Again, it's his job to go around and put things right, probably make judgments on cases and things like that. He is doing what he's supposed to. He's not causing any trouble. And he is flying the flag.
And he goes to Troy, and then he visits the oracle at the Temple of Apollo in Claros.
Mm-hmm.
Claros was a Greek sanctuary on the coast of Ionia. Today, it's in Turkey. Archaeological excavations there have discovered structures dating back to the 10th century BCE.
Damn. Oh, now, my
according,
God, that's incredible.
According to Tacitus, the oracle prophesied to Germanicus in dark hints, as oracles usually do, an early doom. And the oracle gave it to him in a riddle. I actually have the riddle. It's not really a riddle. It's just like a little poem, really. It was, roses are red, violets are blue. 2 steps forward if you're going to have a long life. Wait a second, Germanicus, not you.
It probably wasn't even that clear. They probably said, your canoe is blue. It may be red if there's rain. I mean, they probably just gave him some absolute shit so that way they don't get in trouble no matter what happens. So again, if you give me my prophecy in such riddles that I can understand it, it's useless, but it makes a great Instagram pic.
It's like, you remember there was that guy that used to have a TV show in the 90s where he was like reading people's minds? Can't remember his name. He was huge, though. Huge. Wonder what happened to him. Anyway, you know, you'd have a member of the audience. He'd be like, I'm getting a message that from a dead relative of yours that begins with the letter M. Is there anyone in your family who's dead that's name starts with the letter M?
Or Mary? Has the M in their name.
Yes, Mary. Yes. Mary, I can see Mary wants now. To say something about she's sorry. Is there anything Mary would be sorry for? She never paid back that $10 that I loaned her when we went to McDonald's.
Yes!
That's it! Yes, it's the $10 that...
It's tearing her up inside. Yeah. God, yeah. But again, he can say that he went there. Now, if I may, if we're finished with the Apollo, not that we have to be, but during all of these travels, Pizzo, the piece of shit, is on his way to Syria. And he is already, I don't even know how you want to describe it. Is he causing trouble? Is he already getting into his job? But when he's in Athens, there's already speeches that he's making indirectly criticizing Germs about his conduct, that he's too friendly with the local people. He's like, you know, it's like De Gaulle. If you're in charge, you reign over them, you rule over them, you look down on them. But no, Germanicus has come in, hey, how's it going? I've only got one lictor. I'm like, just like you, I'm still cool, whatever. And this guy just goes in there and he starts bad-mouthing Germanicus right from the get-go. I think he might have pissed off some people. There might have been instances of violence. But the point is, he is getting stuck into his job. And let's face it, he's probably loving it. But again, we don't know what Tiberius told him. But even in Athens, the shit is already being stirred up. This piece of shit is stirring up shit.
Yeah, he sounds like he gave a Trump speech while he was in Athens. He said, Germanicus was here. He's very friendly. Personally, I don't like people that supported Mithridates against Sulla and Antony against Augustus. I prefer people that supported Augustus, okay? People that supported Sulla. I don't like the Athenians very much. I'm here in your city. It's smelly. There's garbage. There's rapists in the street. There's people mugging people on trams. Okay, I don't think Germanicus should have been so nice. I prefer people who don't get captured and be nice. I don't know what that's got to do with it.
Don't look me in the eyes. Yeah. So he's already causing shit, which I don't know if Germs hears about this, but in hindsight, obviously, we already know. I mean, something's building up already, and this guy's like on his first stop, so who knows. But it turns out that Pizzo is not just an ass because of his personality. You probably have more on this than I do, but back in the day in Athens, he tried to use his influence to get a dependent, Theophilus, acquitted of forgery. And I guess just because he said, you know, he's my relative and I'm this amazing blue blood, you should let him go. But that did not work. The guy still found guilty. So again, not only does he have a personal gripe against Athens, he's also putting down Germanicus. So this guy is just starting off batting 1,000, just pissing all over everything that Germanicus has done. He's following in his tracks and he's pissing all over everything.
Yeah, well, it's his choice. He's not called Pisser Shit for nothing, man. He's pissing and shitting all over everything. He sails at full speed to catch up with Germanicus at Rhodes. Now, when he gets close to the island, a big storm hits and he's nearly going to be shipwrecked. But Germanicus sends triremes out to help him, picks him up, brings him to shore, dries him off, gets him a hot meal. Pisso shit is still...
Rubs his feet.
Still right. Cranky about Germanicus.
Jeez.
Stays one day on Rhodes and then quickly doesn't even say thank you, doesn't write a note, thank you note, doesn't even leave a good review on Yelp, just heads straight to Syria. Right. And then...
I got a job to do. Yeah.
When he gets to Syria, he immediately starts to try and tie the loyalty of the Syrian legions to himself before Germanicus can get there and make them love him. According to Tacitus, there were bribes distributed to the troops, promises made, disciplinarians were dismissed and replaced by suck-ups that Piso had brought along. Tacitus writes, when he reached Syria and the legions, he began by bribery and favoritism to encourage the lowest of the common soldiers, removing the old centurions and the strict tribunes and assigning their places to creatures of his own or to the vilest of the men. While he allowed idleness in the camp, licentiousness in the towns, and the soldiers to roam through the country and take their pleasure. He went such lengths in demoralizing them that he was spoken of in their vulgar talk as the father of the legions. Plancina, too, instead of keeping herself within the proper limits of a woman, would be present at the evolutions of the cavalry and the maneuvers of the cohorts and would fling insulting remarks at Agrippina and Germanicus.
Damn.
Now, if you think about this for a second.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, they're calling Piso the father of the legions. Not Tiberius. Not Germanicus. Piso, father of the legions. This isn't a good look. He must have really trusted Tiberius if he thinks he can get away with that. If they, like, if they'd said that to Germanicus, Germanicus would have went, no,
bring it down.
Not me. Yeah, Tiberius is the father of legions. I'm just his guy, right? Like, let's not start that. Right? But Piso's like, yeah, baby, got a little badge made up, got to put on his business cards. Father of the legions.
Yeah, now, for me, I mean, the last thing you ever want to do, and history bears me out on this, is pretty much give troops a free rein. They're going around, they're harassing people, they're doing whatever they want. Discipline has broken down. It's probably a good thing that there's no fighting or enemies nearby. But like you said, they're doing whatever they want. They give into their worst impulses, and they thank the guy who made all this possible by calling him the father of the legions. And again, I think you're right. This has got to get back to Tiberius. I don't know how quickly, and I don't know what in form, but Piso must have went, it's okay because I'm acting for him, so it's going to be okay. But still, this would make me nervous giving Tiberius's mentality. But Piso was doing a great job. He's got his wife involved, and he is fulfilling Tiberius's mission. The troops there, even though they're now undisciplined, love him, and they are looking to him, and they're not going to be looking to Germanicus. Mission accomplished.
Honestly, I don't buy this story at all.
Yeah?
Yeah, what? Like, what kind
what,
of...
What part don't you buy? Or what...
What kind of a Roman commander goes to a foreign land where you're an occupying force and starts encouraging removal of discipline in the troops, idleness, licentiousness... Yeah. Demoralizing the troops deliberately.
Especially blue blood.
And allowing yourself to be called the father of the legions. I just don't... That just smells like bullshit
too far.
To me, I've got to say. I think Tacitus is spinning this too far. I just can't... I mean, that's not... I mean, you're putting yourself at risk if you start to weaken the troops when you are in a foreign territory, an occupied territory where they've already... So when's this? This is sort of 16, something like that, 17. Did we figure out what year it was?
He got his consulship in 18, so it's 18 or 19. Yeah, yeah.
18. So they've already had one revolution by the Jews in the same year that Herod died, 6 CE, there was a revolt by the Jews. Do you know who the leader of the revolt of 6 CE was?
No, tell me.
Judas of Galilee.
I did not know that.
Not Jesus of Galilee. Not Judas Iscariot.
Right.
Judas of Galilee.
I'd never read any books on him.
Yeah, he led a revolt in the year of 6. He said, hey, let's tell the Romans to go fuck themselves. We're going to pay taxes, stand up for our – got to fight for our right to party. And, so it's already – you know, they've had some argy-bargy from the Jews. It's not like they're just taking it like Hindu cows going to the slaughter here. Hindus don't take the cows to the slaughter. Mixing my metaphors, anyway.
So it might be more accurate to say, let's take the story turn it down a little bit, whereas Pizzo, because again, he is the haughtiest motherfucker that I've ever seen in history. Maybe he did go there, find acceptable ways to him that were to win the troops over. But again, he's still trying to fulfill the mission of Tiberius, but not doing it in such flagrant ways. Because again, that is going too far. That is literally destabilizing the area by having the troops just fuck off and do whatever they want. So maybe it was a more modified version of what we've read.
Yeah, I don't buy Tacitus's version. Anyway, Germs is aware of all of this, apparently.
Right.
But he's got business to attend to first. So he goes to Armenia, where Venones, the Cohones, had been removed. The throne is still vacant. So he crowns a guy called Zeno
as
king. It's a good name, Zeno. We need more.
We need
Zenos.
Gnaeus Zeno Harris.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty badass.
Your next marriage. by the way, shout out.
Our next kid. Might just be with someone else.
Shout out to Jessica Robles, who got married the other
Congratulations.
Day. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should dig up that old sex tape she sent us and play that for the next show. Send it to her husband. Zeno took the name Artaxias, ruled peacefully for 15 years. Then Germs takes care of the integration of Cappuccino and come again into the empire.
He has his lieutenants who take care of that. They work on turning this place into a province, making the people, as best you can, okay with the Roman rule. And, of course, one of the things you do, a la Trump, is you cut taxes that were levied by the previous king. Of course, Trump only cut taxes on the rich. But the point is, this is being handled, this frontier, this entity, these different countries, they're being handled, they're being pacified. Germanicus is doing his job. And as far as we can tell, he's not raising a ruckus or making Tiberius nervous like he did in Germany.
And then he has to deal with the Piso situation.
Yeah.
So he sends an order to Piso that either he, Piso, or his son, Marcus, should send a detachment of troops to Armenia as a guard of honor.
Yeah. There's no trouble. Right.
Just ignored the order.
I think he hit delete on the email.
Like Germanicus ignored the orders from Tiberius to come home from Germany.
Yeah.
He ignores Germanicus's orders.
I don't think Germanicus likes being on this end of that situation. So, obviously, they have to meet face-to-face and work this stuff out. So, is it Cyrus, northeast of Antioch, where the winter quarter of the 10th Legion is at? They're going to meet and hopefully be able to look each other in the eye, shake hands, work this stuff out, bygones be bygones, all for the greater glory of Rome, because, hey, we're on the same team.
But it didn't go well. Neither was prepared to acknowledge the other as superior. And so they shouldn't. I mean, Piso wasn't superior to Germanicus. Germanicus had big imp. He had the biggest imp you can get.
Look at this.
Piso didn't have the big imp. He was just the governor of a region. He should have acknowledged, I think, that Germs had the big imp. He's like, fuck your imp. We don't care about your imp. I don't need imp. I'm a piece of shit. That's all I need.
Everything we've read about and everything we've talked about the Romans, about their political system, it is all about Imperium. How many times have we seen that someone has been guilty of a crime, they purposefully get a job with Imperium because during that time they cannot be tried for anything and you just go from position to position to position as best you can. That way you're always protected. I mean, Imperium is everything to these guys, and this blue blood decides, nope, my lineage or whatever, or maybe the words that were whispered into my ear by Tiberius trumps your imperium, even though it was given to you by the Senate. So he's in the wrong, but the point is he's not backing down. And Germs doesn't want to go too far. Yeah, I could yell and I could scream and I could snap my fingers maybe and have my guards come in here and bitch slap this guy. But the point is he's an older guy. He's experienced, you know, and generally in Rome, we try to value those kinds of things. So Germs doesn't want to go too far. Plus he knows he's been sent there by Tiberius. So it's a very sticky situation, but Germs is not getting the respect that he deserves. But again, and he's not sure how to react to that.
So
then Germ's friends comes along and they throw gas on the flames, I guess.
By the, you know, from that time onwards, neither of these guys.
It's on. Like Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, just open enemies, open warfare. They met, they didn't like, they shook hands, they wiped their hands on their pants afterwards. I mean, just instant hate. And both sides have associates who are egging them on. I mean, this has just gotten really ugly, really fast. But again, no one's quite sure what to do.
There's a party being thrown for Germanicus, and Piso's invited by the king of the Nabateans.
How many times have we done a party and something horrible has happened?
Someone dies. Stay out of the cloakroom. Now, we talked about the Nabateans a long, long time ago on our Alexander show. We talked about them a couple of times, I seem to recall. But for people who haven't heard that, the Nabateans are the Arab people who built Al-Qasneh, also known as the treasury at Petra in Jordan, the big red stone carved into a cliff face building.
Oh, yeah.
You have to walk through a little ravine, or a long ravine actually, to get there. The final resting place of the Holy Grail in Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade.
Right.
Believed to have been the mausoleum of the Nabatean king Aretas IV in the 1st century CE. Possibly the same king who's throwing this party for Germanicus.
Wow.
He might have been the guy who built the treasury at Petra, or it was built for him after he died. Either way, kings normally built their own mausoleums, though. Now, we talked about the Nabateans, as I said, on the Alexander series, and I read this long quote from Diodorus of Sicily, which I'm going to read again, if you don't mind, with your permission, Bubs.
Please.
For the sake of those who do not know, it will be useful to state in some detail the customs of these Arabs, by following which it is believed they preserved their liberty. They live in the open air, claiming as native land a wilderness that has neither rivers nor abundant springs from which it is possible for a hostile army to obtain water. It is their custom neither to plant grain, set out any fruit-bearing tree, use wine, nor construct any house. And if anyone is found acting contrary to this, death is the penalty.
Damn.
They follow this custom because they believe that those who possess these things are, in order to retain the use of them, easily compelled by the powerful to do their bidding. Some of them raise camels, others sheep, pasturing them in the desert. While there are many Arabian tribes who use the desert as pasture, the Nabateans far surpass the others in wealth, although they are not much more than 10,000 in number. For not a few of them are accustomed to bring down to the sea frankincense and myrrh and the most valuable kinds of spices, which they procure from those who convey them from what is called the Arabia Eudaimon. They are exceptionally fond of freedom, and whenever a strong force of enemies comes near, they take refuge in the desert, using it as a fortress, for it lacks water and cannot be crossed by others, but to them alone, since they have prepared subterranean reservoirs lined with stucco, it furnishes safety. As the earth in some places is clayey and in others is of soft stone, they make great excavations in it, the mouths of which they make very small, but by constantly increasing the width as they dig deeper, they finally make them of such size that each side has a length of one plethrum. After filling these reservoirs with rainwater, they close the openings, making them even with the rest of the ground, and they leave signs that are known to themselves but are unrecognizable by others. They water their cattle every other day so that if they flee through waterless places, they may not need a continuous supply of water. They themselves use as food, flesh and milk, and those of the plants that grow from the ground which are suitable for this purpose. For among them there grow the pepper and plenty of the so-called wild honey from trees which they drink mixed with water. There are also other tribes of Arabs, some of whom even till the soil, mingling with the tribute-paying peoples, and have the same customs as the Syrians, except they do not dwell in houses. It appears that such are the customs of the Arabs. But when the time draws near for the national gathering at which those who dwell round about are accustomed to meet, some sell goods and others purchase things that are needful to them. They travel then to this meeting, leaving on a certain rock their possessions and their old men, also their women and their children.
Sure.
This place is exceedingly strong but unwalled, and it is distant 2 days' journey from the settled country.
Wow. They are outsiders. They're minimalist, but they deal with stuff that makes a lot of money. So they're rich in that sense. And the Romans have them as relative allies. So, good on you, Romans.
Diodorus was writing that probably... He died in 30 BCE, so in the 20s... No, the 40s BCE or the 30s. So, you know, what's that? 40, 50 years before...
Right.
Germanicus is there. So, they don't sound like the people that are going to put on a big, great party. They sound like they're a bit Spartan in their approach to things, but anywho, they apparently knew how to party with the best of them, as we'll see.
Well, it might have been a simple, straightforward affair, but the gifts that they give are meant to impress, and they do impress. Yeah, Germanicus and Agrippa, having the biggest imperium, are given heavy gold crowns. Pizzo rocks up with his guests and some friends and some other guests, and they get gold crowns, but they're not quite as big, not quite as elaborate, not quite as fancy. And Pizzo loses his shit, whether this was real, whether this was something that he was going to do either way. He just freaks out, throws his gold crown down, and he says, "This is a banquet for the son of a Roman princeps, not the son of a king of Parthia." So he goes, "Look, you people live," and again, this doesn't make any sense with what you just said, but he attacks them for living luxuriously. He says it's very un-Roman, but the point is he goes off on these people, and I don't know if it was just his natural-born arrogance or if this is staged just to, again, be opposite of Germanicus, but he kind of ruins the party. He's a dick. He's Pizzo the pisser. He storms out, and everybody's just left standing around staring at each other or staring at their feet, feeling awkward. But I do remember you and I talking about Caesar and Pompey and Sulla and Augustus in the past, and they were given crowns by people from the East. That's how they honored people. That was their thing. And so Pizzo should have recognized that, but he doesn't. He completely flies off the handle. He overreacts, but that's just how these people give their awards or thanks.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Pizzo ruins another party.
Yeah. Germanicus apparently said nothing because he knew Pizzo was under the protection of Tibo.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, just a lot of grief, a lot of, there's a beef. They're beefing, these guys.
Beefing and griefing. Yeah.
Beefing.
Yeah.
Now, so far, Germs hasn't dealt with the Artabanus of Parthia issue. And then envoys arrive from King Artibati to remind him of the treaty that was concluded between Augustus and Frati IV.
Yeah.
And they want to renew the treaty.
Sure, it works. Keep it going. Yeah.
We don't need to fight. Quite honestly, it doesn't work out well for you when we do, so you might want to just take it.
I'll snap. Yeah.
And to demonstrate his respect for Germanicus, Artibati said he was prepared to meet him at the Euphrates. The border of the empire. I'm going to go all the way from my capital.
Right.
Probably Babylon still.
Yeah.
all the way to the Euphrates to me. I'll meet you halfway.
Yeah, nice, that's fair.
It's a nice little cafe there. they have a, single bean.
Yeah,
you should see the way they do that. They have a fancy drip thing that they do. I think it's Colombian bean.
Incredible cheese board.
Slow drip thing that they do. It's really amazing. You can have it hot or cold. No milk, no cream, no sugar, anything. You just take it neat like you drink your single malts. Really, you should check it out if you haven't been there.
Sounds like this.
I know the guy who owns it.
Right.
No, it's drip.
Sorry.
Slow drip. I'll book us a table.
Okay. I'll book us the whole damn restaurant. Yeah.
You love it.
Yeah.
The ambiance of the place, very hipster.
Yeah.
Baristas all have beards. On the walls, they've got LP covers from the 60s.
Yeah.
You love it. You love it. It's great. The chairs are a little bit cracked. They're like, they got the chairs from Goodwill.
Right.
A little bit cracked leather, old school desks.
Yeah.
Old sort of tiki sort of bobblehead hula girls. there's some ashtrays. They're like green glass ashtrays from the 70s. All of the cups are different. Like there's no commonality between the cups.
Wow.
Sort of cracked. Again, just Goodwill. It's kind of funky. I think you like it.
Is the floor made of brick set in a herringbone pattern, or is that going too far?
Yes. And I hear it's very stable. Very stable, that pattern. Should you ever want to build a dome?
Hundreds of years. Yeah. Now, but you have to mix politics with this. So a part of the message is, look, until we can meet, and I just can't wait to meet you. I heard really good things about you and your hair, your blonde hair. I'm going to ask that you keep Venones out of Syria. I don't want you encouraging people in the nobles in Parthia to rebel, to give me any shit. So if you can keep things calm on those two scores until we can meet and renew the peace, I just, your biggest fan, I would just really appreciate it. And I look forward to meeting you.
So all of this suggests that Germanicus may have been planning an invasion of Parthia.
Ooh, tall order.
Well, we know that who went to Parthia the first time? Triumvir.
Marcus Crassus.
Crassus. They poured gold down his severed head.
Right.
Big Julie was going to go. Got assassinated a couple of days before he was going to leave.
Mm.
Mark Antony went, didn't go so well for Mark Antony.
Stabbed him back.
Basically got his ass handed to
him. Right, right.
And Augustus made fun of him for it. And then Augustus just did peace. He was like, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Right.
Particularly.
Deflower, but same thing.
Mm. Yeah, deflower of maidens. That's me. You're the mother of dragons, I'm the deflower of maidens. Nice to meet you. But it looks like Germanicus maybe was doing something about this.
Either directly or indirectly, maybe he was just going to cause, like the modern CIA, just go there, cause trouble. You're not going to fight your enemy openly, but if you can cause trouble, keep them focused at home, you're free to operate outside their country. And at the very least, I would think the Romans would be interested in doing something like that.
Mm. Now, Germanicus turned down the invitation to meet with Artibati on the Euphrates, maybe because he thought Tiberius might get upset if I'm changing policy towards Parthia, negotiating policy directly. I mean, I do have the big imp. you did send me all the way out here, but he's very cautious, according to Tacitus. Doesn't want to overstep the boundaries.
Yeah. Well, there's a huge difference between being the heir and being the princeps. And I think he knows his place. As confident and maybe arrogant as he is, I think he knows what's wise. And so far, he hasn't put a foot wrong. And I think this is just another solid decision. Unless I have Tiberius's permission, I'm not meeting any major kings. Fuck that. That's how I get in trouble. And I'm not going to do that.
Meanwhile, Venones without cojones is removed from the cloakroom at Antioch. They finally let him out to a place called Pompeiopolis.
I like that. Pompeiopolis.
Now, you're a bit slow, Bubs, so I'm going to give you three guesses as to who came up with the name of the town, Pompeiopolis.
Yeah. Okay, I hear the timer. Tick, 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 tick. I'm going to guess Barry and Stan, but they charged $1 billion and it took them 3 years.
Very good, Ray. You got it. You got it, my friend. Barry and Stan were hired by Pompey the Great, Gnaeus Pompeius. Gnaeusopolis.
How about Gnaeusopolis? I like that.
Yeah, you remember everyone used to tell me when we first started, I'd call him Pompey, and people would say it's Pompey, not Pompey. His Latin name was Gnaeus Pompeius Magnus.
Yeah.
Surely you would abbreviate Pompeius to just Pompey, right?
As opposed to Pompey, right?
Pompey. It wasn't Pompeius, maybe it was, but no, it's Pompeius.
I'm an American. Yeah. I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, that's what I said. Fuck, I'm American. I can do whatever I want.
And you are, or you're almost partially American.
I haven't sent in my forms yet.
Oh, paperclip a $50 bill to it or something, but you do whatever you want.
It was founded, one of the cities in Turkey, founded by good old Pompey in 64 BCE when he was raping and pillaging and making his bones.
Of the coast of Cilicia or Cilicia, like you like to say it. So again, Venones is probably being treated well, but he's being pushed to the side for the bigger issue of peace between Rome and Parthia. Sacrifice.
Now, Piso, apparently, somehow, for some reason, is now good friends with Venones.
Oh.
He wants to give Venones back his cojones. Now, according to Tacitus, this is because Venones had been lavishing presents on Plancina, the wife of Piso. I'm not sure. He's like, every time she walked past the cloakroom, he'd just open it a crack because they just had a chain on it.
Right.
He'd go, yeah, hey, hey, psst, psst, hey, hey, hey,
you,
Plancina.
You, yeah.
You want a fur?
What size are you? What size are you?
I got a lot of furs here. Let me.
Do you want a stole? I got a mink. Yeah.
Mink? Yeah. Yeah. Good on you. Yeah. She goes, I'm in fucking Syria. It's hot as fuck. Why? He goes, well, it gets really cold in the desert at night. You know? Really cold.
But one day you'll go back. Yeah, yeah, no. Fair point. I'm just saying. It's all I got. It's all I got.
It's all I got to give.
I'm in a fucking cloakroom. Are you kidding me? I'm doing the best I can. But he probably gave gifts. I mean, every king, everybody who can, gives gifts to everyone who is important and their wives. That's just good policy. I wouldn't be surprised if that's what he did. But, of course, we'll never know the details.
But he's kind of an ex-king.
Yeah, and he's been demoted twice so far.
Quite a few years at this point. I don't know what he has left to give, but...
Well, he's got hope.
So, apparently, one of the reasons Germanicus moved Venones to Pompeiopolis was to piss Piso off.
Right. Win-win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, Germanicus makes a bit of a boo-boo. And this might be his undoing. In the year 19, he goes to Egypt.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun! And I think we're going to have to talk about why that was a bad idea.
Yeah.
In our next episode.
Oh, all right. Bye.
That's an hour. Don't go yet, Bubs.
No, I was just saying bye to everybody from the cloakroom. Thank you for listening.
Okay, let me read another review before we go.
Yes.
This is from the United States of Trump, from Not 113. Absolutely sublime, says Not 113. Where do I even begin? The subject matter is enthralling on its own, but when you throw in the comedic genius and sometimes meandering ramblings of these hosts, as well as the perfect dash of 80s rock, well, you're in for a real treat. Ray and Cam riff off each other so well, I might go as far as to say they are the greatest duo since Augustus and Agrippa.
Wow.
Which is which? You know, Agrippa was the guy who actually did the work, so I guess I'm the Agrippa, which makes you Augustus.
I take all the credit. Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. I really am. It feels right.
That's how it works, too.
Yeah.
You know, we're one of them. Oh, it's freaking absolutely not 113 goes on. We're one of them does the heavy lifting, and the other is simply going to be hanging around for a long, long while. Love this podcast. It honestly brings a smile to my face every time I see a new episode is available. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you, not 113.
Yeah.
Send us an email.
Okay. Yes.
And with your address.
I'll bring it to your house. A gift.
Ray will, yeah, he will.
Piece of the Colosseum.
That's all from this episode. We'll be back next week with Germanicus Goes to Egypt. Oh, before we do that, let me play Chrissy's ad again.
Hey, everyone. This is Chrissy again. So I actually did listen to last week's episode, and I kind of know what Cam's talking about when he goes on and on about his and Ray's chemistry. Anyway, guys, let me help you be a holiday hero to the ladies in your life. Get a Lash Boost, which is hands down one of Rodan and Field's most popular and beloved products. Because, duh, what woman doesn't want banging lashes? It's a perfect stocking stuffer, and she's going to feel so sexy with longer, fuller lashes. Trust me. And ladies, why not treat yourselves during the holiday season to Lash Boost or any one of our huge range of skincare products? So email me at chrissydreilly@gmail.com. That's chrissydreilly@gmail.com. And mention that you've heard this on one of Cam and sister wife Ray's podcasts. And I'll give you 10% off plus free shipping in the US, Canada, and Australia. Hit me up. If you need some help or advice, I'll totally call you and offer you a consultation. Get your holiday shopping done already and be a hero. Bye.
Send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.